Hey everybody, thanks for joining us for this episode of the GovCon video blog. So in March, the U.S. Department of Labor issued a notice of proposed rulemaking that proposes to make changes to DOL's Davis-Bacon Act regulations. So briefly, the Davis-Bacon Act was enacted in 1931, and its purpose is pretty straightforward. It requires federal contractors to pay what are called prevailing wages to workers on federal construction projects. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court has nicknamed the act the minimum wage law for construction workers. And the goal is to prevent large federal construction projects from acting as a downward force to depress local wages by forcing contractors to at least match local prevailing wages. Now, the notice of proposed rulemaking that the Department of Labor issued in March is 108 pages long and covers more than 50 changes to the Davis-Bacon Act regulations. And those changes cover a wide range of issues, from tinkering with definitions, to clarifying flow-down requirements, to modifying enforcement provisions. Now, we aren't going to cover many or even most of them here, and we'll leave that for a future webinar or vlog series once the final rule changes are actually adopted. But there are a few proposed changes that could have a significant impact on prevailing wages, and contractors should at least be aware of those changes now. So in this episode, we're going to go over three things that government contractors should know about DOL's proposed changes to the Davis-Bacon Act regulations. So the first thing that contractors should know is that under the proposed rule, DOL will revert to the three-step method for determining prevailing wages. So for nearly 50 years after the Davis-Bacon Act was enacted, the Department of Labor in fact used what it calls the three-step method to determine a locality's prevailing wages, which again is the minimum that federal contractors have to pay their construction workers. So before 1982, under the three-step method, a prevailing wage for a particular worker category first is the single wage rate that is paid to a majority of workers. Now, if there is no single rate that's paid to a majority of workers, then the prevailing wage is the wage rate that's paid to the greatest number of workers, provided that it's paid to at least 30% of the workers. And if there is no wage rate that can meet this 30% threshold, then the prevailing wage rate is a weighted average rate. Well, in 1982, the Department of Labor implemented a rule that got rid of the second step of this three-step method. So after 1982, a prevailing wage rate was either the wage rate that's paid to a majority of workers, or if there was none, then a weighted average rate. But over time, according to the Department of Labor, this led to an overuse of average wages. And even though the weighted average method was supposed to be a fallback method, it actually became the predominant method for determining wage rates. And the problem there is that a prevailing wage is supposed to be an actual wage that is most widely paid. But an average wage is often just that. It's just an average that isn't actually paid to anyone. So in its proposed rulemaking, the Department of Labor is proposing to bring back the 30% rule in order to apply once again the three-step method for determining prevailing wages. Now, some will argue that in locations where unions are active, higher collectively bargained rates will have undue weight under the 30% rule. But DOL disagrees and says that the effect of collectively bargained rates should be the same, whether it applies at 30% or a 50% threshold. Now, whether rates creep up or not will remain to be seen, but if the rule goes into effect, contractors should be on the lookout for wage rate determinations that change prevailing wages. The second thing that government contractors should know is that DOL's proposed changes clarify that prevailing wages set by state or local governments can be used. So under the existing regulations, The Department of Labor can consider state or local prevailing wage rates, but they suggest that any local wage rate determinations must conform to DOL's prevailing wage formulation. While the Department of Labor's proposed changes explicitly permit it to adopt prevailing wage rates that are set by state or local officials, even if the methods used to determine the rates are different than those that were used by the Department of Labor to make its wage rate determinations. But before the Department of Labor can use a state or local wage rate, it must first determine that the process that was used by the state or local government to come up with the wage rate meets criteria that are listed in the Department of Labor regulations. So one last point here. Where the use of local rates can make a difference, and DOL pointed to this in its explanation of the proposed rule changes, is in locations where the Davis-Bacon rates are, for whatever reason, substantially out of date. Well, in those instances, being able to adopt local wage rate determinations that are reliably determined can help fill in the gaps for DOL. So the third thing that government contractors should know is that DOL proposes to eliminate the bar on mixing metropolitan and rural wage rates. So when DOL makes a prevailing wage determination for a construction category, it will look at survey data for a location on a countywide basis. But if there isn't enough data in a particular county to make a wage determination, it will zoom out and expand the scope of its review to include a group of surrounding counties. And if there still isn't enough data, it will zoom out again and expand the scope to a larger group of surrounding counties. And finally, if it still lacks enough data, it will use statewide data to make its determination. But in 1982, in that rule change that we talked about earlier, it added language that barred mixing metropolitan and rural area wage rates. So for wage rate determinations for a metropolitan county, when the Department of Labor zooms out to the surrounding counties, rural counties are excluded, and vice versa. When the Department of Labor makes a wage determination for a rural county, if it needs to zoom out to surrounding counties, then metropolitan counties are excluded. Well, in its explanation of the recent proposed changes, DOL identified several problems with these exclusions. Number one, it ignores that counties can have significant urban and rural pockets. Number two, it also ignores that workers that live in rural counties might commute to nearby metropolitan counties and vice versa. So construction projects in different counties may actually be competing for the same workforce. So excluding metropolitan wage rates in rural counties with a highly mobile workforce that earns a good portion of its income in metropolitan areas may act to suppress wages. So the Department of Labor is now considering eliminating the bar against mixing metropolitan and rural county data when it expands its scope to surrounding counties. Now, if that rule change goes into effect, contractors that are located in areas that border mixed neighboring counties are going to have to pay attention to see if DOL's prevailing wage determinations change. Well, again, there are a number of other changes that are proposed in DOL's notice, but these three that we just went over are the ones that really stood out to us. So that's all I have for today's vlog. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you come back for future episodes of the GovCom video blog.